You're listening to Alien X Radio, and this is your afternoon interview.
Hi, Keith. This is Belinda Bolaski calling you.
How you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you very much for taking the time to give me a call.
Is my timing right?
It's pretty good. Pretty good, yeah. Right on time.
Good. Okay.
Awesome. So, I just got to ask you, how much fun was it working in a werewolf movie?
How much what? How much fun was it?
Yeah, how much fun is it working in a werewolf movie?
Well, working in any Joe Dante film is always fun because Joe is a great deal of fun. And it was my second time with Joe. I had done Piranha with him before, so I'd had a really good time working on that one. And John Sayles, who had written Piranha, had actually written the part of Carrie Fisher for me out of the character Betsy in Piranha for The Howling. And so he sort of extended that character into Carrie Fisher. So it was very exciting to have someone writing, somebody like John Sayles, of course, writing for me, and to be working with Joe Dante. I mean, I did 11 films with him, so I feel very blessed.
I gotta say, out of all the werewolf movies that I've seen, that one, the transformations of the werewolves and just the entire, it just seemed like that one is still one of my favorite werewolf movies of all time. It really holds the test of time.
For that, you pay homage to Rob Bottin, because there's no one like Rob Bottin. I mean, he created that werewolf, and he made that werewolf so real for you, for me, for everyone watching. And that's why it's become, I think, a classic and has lasted through the test of time.
Yeah, it really is good. Also, you worked with D. Wallace in that movie as well. How great is it working with D. Wallace? I've seen her a couple times at Motor City Nightmares here in Detroit, but I've never really had a chance to sit down and talk with her. I'm hoping to get her on the show.
Oh, that's too bad. D is a total delight, as it were. And and I did a couple. I did Runaway Daughters with her, too, for HBO with Joe Dante years later. So we were able to, again, work together. And now, of course, we've been doing a lot of these conventions together. So, you know, I love being paired up with her. We make perfect opposites, and we're really good friends.
Excellent. That is awesome. So, so everybody has a completely different story about where they began. Where was it that you cut your chops, as it will, and began your acting? Where did you begin at? Was it the stage?
I actually started in my neighborhood when I was about 4 or 5 years old. I would gather all my friends together, and I would write these little scripts, and we would rehearse them and charge the parents a nickel to come see them.
Nice.
I'm afraid I came in with it. So I was sort of directing everybody in my neighborhood when I was quite young. And then I started doing theater when I was very young, and went on to have drama scholarships in junior and senior high school, and again in college. So it was always just my thing. I heard this little voice in the hall when I was very young, and it told me, I really honestly believe it was God telling me that my life was going to be about communication, that I was going to be an actor. And to be honest, I always, when I hit any corner in my life, I just followed the voice.
Good thing you were listening to it.
Well, yeah, it turned out pretty good, actually.
Yeah, some people hear that voice and they go, oh, that's just, you know, that's a pipe dream voice. You know, we don't really follow that. But some people have to follow it. It's a good thing you did.
Yes, I was definitely driven, and I think it's in my blood. I mean, my father was a jockey, and he was actually he quit school when he was 12 or 13, unbeknownst to his family, and started riding horses in New Orleans, you know, and nobody knew how young he was. And I mean, I think I have that same spirit in me, you know, where I'm driven to do what it is I'm meant to do, like he was.
Yeah, that's and you know, things like that too. They're not an easy thing to achieve. I mean, you really have to. It's not, you know, some people say, oh, you're in acting now, you just can get jobs all the time. No, it's a constant battle, isn't it? I mean, you're always going to be unemployed. You know,
one thing about acting is the minute you get a job, there you are working yourself right out of the job.
Yep. Eventually that job is going to end.
So then you have to go get another job, and it's extremely grueling. You know, it's really difficult to constantly have to reinvent yourself. But that is the fun of acting, is to be able to play different characters. So, you know, you can be Yul Brynner and play the same character for 50 years on Broadway and in films, or, you know, you can play various different parts. And I was always driven to be a character actor, so I guess it was destined for me.
Because as much as, The Howling stands out in my mind, of course, of movies that I saw years ago, that really has, burned an impression into my mind, because that was, like I said, the very first werewolf that actually scared me. All the other ones were just like wolfmen.
You were really young, so like how old were you when you saw it?
Well, I'm not going to get into that. but another movie, obviously, that you were in that is also, part of my life. I mean, we've even got a stuffed Mogwai in the house. We got one in the house here because the Gremlins was awesome. I mean, did you get to play around with the little Mogwai?
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. And, so did about 30 other people who were kneeling on the floor blowing through straws, to make them move and do things. It's one thing, to see the film, but it's another to make it, because it's not at all what you're seeing. Not at all what you're seeing,
Right. I imagine you have to do a lot of acting with... like, the things you're acting with aren't necessarily in the shot with you, or?
Well, actually, when we did The Howling, Rob had not finished The Werewolf. So, In all of the scenes where you see me reacting to the werewolf, but not in a double shot with the werewolf, you will actually notice that my hair is about 3 inches shorter than it is in any scene or any shot where I am in the same shot as the werewolf, because the werewolf wasn't finished. I flew back to Hawaii, and 3 months later, I was called to come back and finish shooting because the werewolf was done. And when I got there, I said, my hair is longer. And the hair lady said, no, it looks exactly the same. And I said, no, it's longer. And she said, no. So, all my close-ups, everything, all my reaction shots were shot 3 months before. And then all the shots with the werewolf were shot 3 months later, and you'll see my hair. If you watch it in slow motion, you'll see my hair go, short one, short one. It's pretty funny. But, yeah, we had nothing to react to, and we had no idea what it would look like or what it could do.
Right. So, but
we were shooting it, so, we were, you have to have a vivid imagination if you want to be an actor in this business.
So the werewolf, I imagine there was probably many versions of it. There was probably one that somebody wore as a costume. I'd imagine there was one that was animatronic, probably, and one that was just like a statue.
There were several, but most of them didn't work. So it was the final werewolf that Rob made that became the one that ended up in the film. All those other shots we shot them, but they got cut.
Well, it all matters at what makes it out of the film. It doesn't matter how badly things didn't work when the camera wasn't rolling, right?
There's always such a separate movie, laying on the floor when you're done cutting. It's like, they should put those together and see what you have,
Yeah, the director's cut, and then you got the director's cutting room floor version.
Exactly. And Joe, worked with, of course, Mark Goldblatt, but Joe also was first and foremost an editor, so, he's constantly editing in his head as he goes.
Right, you got to stay up on top of that. You can't. I couldn't imagine filming an entire movie and not doing any editing, and then all of a sudden just having all this dumped on you to start doing the whole process. I couldn't imagine that.
I know. And back then it was film, so you're literally cutting it, and you usually have tape hanging everywhere, and little snippets of film hanging from every single thing around you. And then you have to figure out how to put them all back together. Now it's just digitized, and you just go this number to that number. You know, there's no physical cutting.
Right. You just drag and drop, clip, drag and paste. Drop.
Yeah, it's a completely different biz, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I've made a few independent films myself, so, you know, I do know a little bit about how easy it is now as compared to the way it used to be. With, like you said, the razor blades, the cutting, the splicing. Trying to remember what's what.
It was literally cut with a splicer and tape, used tape to mend it together. It's a really grueling process. When I made my student film, I mean, that became, you know, that one of the more frustrating parts is peeling that tape off and cutting it and putting it together. You know, people don't realize, I don't think.
No, and then after.
I mean, never will now because there's no more film.
Right, and then after you had cut it, and then you pasted it back together, you spliced it together with the tape, then you put it back in and checked it, and then you go, ah, and you put it in, like, a couple frames in the wrong spot, and then you got to go back and recut it.
Over, peeling it back off. I borrowed a doubleheader editing bay for when I did my student film with my girlfriend, Carol Vogel, who's also a quite well-known actress. Anyway, we only had one splicer, but we had this double-headed editor thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we're constantly turning and looking at each other and saying, are you finished with the splicer yet? You know? And I would look at her and she'd have film hanging from every part of her, and I would have film hanging from every part. It's a wonder that we still remain friends to this day after, you know, about 72 hours of nonstop editing together.
Yeah, and it gets really to the point, too, where after a while of editing, you just get cross-eyed. Looking at the same, and you go, I got to get away from this thing for a second. And then you go back and realize that there were some things that you might have let go because you were tired. And now you've seen that they need to go back and they got to get fixed.
You have to, right, exactly. It's like a painting, you know, when you're painting, you have to remember the simple thing of getting up and walking away so that you regain your perspective.
That's right. You got to come back and look at it with new eyes.
With fresh eyes, that's right. Yeah.
So what was your favorite project of all that, of everything that you've worked on, what was your favorite project?
Probably Are You My Mother, which was an ABC After School special that I was nominated for an Emmy for. It was myself and Michael York, and I was cast as a bag lady I was actually married to him in it until I get pregnant, and then after giving birth, I have that thing that Tom Cruise doesn't believe in and end up on the streets. And he, in the meantime, tells our daughter that I died at birth. But later in the show, she finds me and realizes that he's lied to her all his life. And it doesn't tie up in a little bow tie. It's actually a true story of a mother and her family. And she didn't go back to living with her family. But the daughter did find her. And they always then were able to make sure she was taken care of, but they couldn't get her back to come back to the house.
So it's quite an emotional trip then.
It was really one of my favorite things I ever done because I know they wanted Bryce Tanner or Barbara Hershey, and I knew I was really up against it in casting, and I went in there with both guns loaded, you know, and did an audition that blew them away, and I got it, and it was unheard of because they wanted these names, and so it was really quite a huge achievement at the time, you know, and at least as far as I was concerned, and you know, being a character actor that I am, I was able to go from the beautiful wedding photo to the bag lady on the street, and I loved that. I love playing that. I love playing that span, you know.
Now I know there's a lot of people draw from different sources for the emotional content that they need for a scene. Some people are, I can't remember what's actually called, method actors, where they have to remain that character even when they're offset, you know, the whole time that they're – where do you draw your emotion from if you have to really pull in something where you have to be really upset? Do you hang on to that, or can you flip that on and flip it off with an action or cut?
Well, it's funny because I'm sort of always in the moment, so I don't ever think of looking for some outside choice to get me somewhere. I'm one of these people, you know, who's even in Spirit, the animated cartoon movie, I'm the one in the balcony standing up screaming at the top of my lungs, "No, Spirit, don't go!" You know, my daughter, who at the time was 8, is the one pulling me down saying, "Mom, it's an animated movie." You know, I'm a believer, so I tend to believe. And so I'm always in the moment of whatever the emotion is, because I think we as human beings have experienced all emotions. We just, as an actor, have to be able to tap into them, you know. In fact, when I did Amazon Women on the Moon, of all movies, I had to cry for something like 18 hours on the set. Because I went from one crying scene to another crying scene to another crying scene. And by the time I was finished, I had literally cried for 18 hours. And makeup kept coming to me saying, "Do you need tears? Do you need tears?" And I would look at her like, "Go away, I'm busy, I'm working, you know? Like, what do you mean, do I need tears?" It's something you do from the inside, not the outside, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was pretty funny, you know, and I think in order to be funny, you have to be serious.
Right. Yeah. That's the balance that people don't realize is so difficult for actors, is you have to be serious about what you're doing, but you also have to be in the moment. You have to be able to pull different emotions out all at the same time. And then, you know, and then at the same time, you can't be serious, and you have to be serious. It's really difficult. I mean, I highly respect it.
It's a fine line. You're absolutely right. I mean, it is. It's a fine line. And in Joe Dante films, you're always in the situation where you have to improv. It's like in Gremlins, I remember the night before we shot, it was like 8:30 at night or something, and I remember calling Joe at his house saying, "Joe, no one's ever delivered a script to me." He says, "Okay." And I said, "Yeah, but I shoot tomorrow." And he says, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, I don't have a script." He says, "Neither do I." He said, "What are you talking about? You've been shooting for 2 months or 2 weeks or whatever it was." And he says, "They don't have a script." I said, "Joe, I don't even know what a gremlin is." He says, "Neither do I." He says, just come. We'll improv something. I said, "Well, where am I? What's going on?" And he gives me this sort of idea of what I'm supposed to do, and I kind of panicked, to be honest, and I ended up bringing this huge wad of paper saying, I panicked, could you look through these and see, you know, I wrote out all these different scenes. Anyway, he loved the first scene I wrote. He goes, "Take this to Polly Holiday, she'll come up with something," and that's the way he works, you know. You're always sort of thrown into the moment. Like, when I did Amazon Women on the Moon, I was in the situation where I was supposed to do a stand-up comedy in front of, come on, Steve Allen, Henny Youngman, Sloppy White, all these people. I was never so scared in my life. I mean, literally, I was freaked. And Ricardo drags me up there in this scene, and I'm introduced. You know, Steve Allen introduces me, and my line is supposed to be, "Well, thank you, Steve," and then I'm supposed to go into my lines. And I thought, how on earth will I ever get their attention, these comics, you know? And I knew Joe had 5 cameras rolling out there, and I just couldn't blow it, you know? So when I was introduced, I turned around and I said, "Thank you, Merv." At which point Steve Allen said, "You're welcome," and went to sit down, and then realized I'd said Merv, not Steve, and he did this double take that is, I mean, he was riveted to me. They were all riveted to me after that, you know? But it's like you have to be loose enough to grab their attention, but then you have to have something behind it to, you know, drive it home.
Yeah, so anybody that says, "Oh, I can do that," yeah, let's see you do that.
Oh, they're so dreaming. It's more than people understand. It really is. And I think it really takes seasoning, you know, your craft to be able to be fluid in a set situation, and, you know, have to deal with all the different things that come up and change right before your eyes. Like I always say to my kids, because I teach, I say, the minute you learn your lines, you're going to arrive on the set and they'll give you the green pages.
Yeah, change it all around on you.
Yeah, it's like, so get over it, you know, get over it now. You know, it's like there's so much you constantly have to just let go of and be ready to, you know, move into whatever's happening. I mean, I didn't know they were going to tie, you know, 15 fish to me in Piranha. I mean, there's so many things you don't realize are going to happen, you know. But listen, I had the best fun. To me, it's fun. I guess there are people who get very uptight or whatever, but I'm a team member, you know. I jump on board and go for it, you know, and I think that's what makes it fun.
Yeah, if you're going to have a, if you're not going to be a truck driver or a ditch digger, if you're going to have a fun job, then you need to have fun while having that fun job, right?
Exactly. You know, I mean, so many people are just so bizarre as far as I'm concerned with their egos and all their stuff, you know. You know, to me, it's like, you know, it's a film where you get a group of people and everybody's pitching in to make it work.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it's a team
but
effort.
That's probably the difference between the independent film and the studio film, but I did a more independent film, so.
Well, Belinda, I do thank you very much for giving me a call today. And on behalf of me and my producer, Michael Klinkenbeard, we thank you very much.